we begin this new year, we do so with an opportunity to look at one of the books in the Bible that we only use about once or twice, it seems like, a year. In the book of Ecclesiastes, we find the passage of Scripture that reminds us that to everything there is a time and a season. In fact, somebody has even observed that the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes is the only biblical writer to ever have a top 10 Billboard chart lyric in all of music history. And of course, we know that from a popular song done back in the 60s. But Solomon, who writes this book, comes to us with a real sense of despair. You can't read the book of Ecclesiastes and make any other conclusions. He's pretty down when he writes this. I read this past week that if you live in St. Petersburg, Florida, in addition to having the probably the record for sun on a daily basis, that you also find yourself, strangely enough, to be living in the saddest city in America. Now, my apologies to all of you from St. Pete, but it's considered to be one of the saddest places in America based on several different kind of statistical analysis, not psychological analysis. This was done by Best Life magazine, a men's magazine. Lots of testosterone there, not necessarily a lot of intelligence. But they tell us that St. Petersburg would be the saddest of the American cities to live in. In fact, they even go beyond that and say that Florida as a whole is pretty depressing. The cities that were in the top 10 in this survey, St. Petersburg, Florida, Detroit, Michigan, Memphis, Tennessee, Tampa, Florida, Louisville, St. Louis, Birmingham, Alabama, where I'm from, Miami, Reno, Las Vegas, Nevada, where I have also spent 10 years of my life. No wonder I'm sad sometimes. I kind of find myself up here. And did you know that Nashville, by the way, Nashville comes in number 41 in the list of the top 100 of the saddest cities in America to live in? Well, Solomon lives in Jerusalem. We know that from the very opening line of the book of Ecclesiastes. Verse 1 of chapter 1 says, "The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." Now, there are some who look at this and would have lots of different opinions as to who the actual author is, but we're going to assume for our purposes this morning that we're talking about Solomon, the son of David, who is king in Jerusalem and is writing this as he surveys some things in life. It may be that it's somewhere around the first of the year for him, and he's looking back at the previous year and thinking about what he wants to do next year. And instead of setting goals and instead of looking at things that he can mark off his to-do list, he probably comes to a conclusion that this sad case of life that he's finding himself in is just really not what he had dreamed or hoped for when he was a young man. Now, Bible scholars tell us some interesting things about the book of Ecclesiastes. I like what the New American Commentary says about it. Ecclesiastes is often looked upon as the Bible's resident alien, that most who read Ecclesiastes wonder why it's even included in the Bible. Its theme is pessimism and despair, and its bottom line may be that life is devoid of security and meaning. Well, have a great day. God bless you for being here today. Look at the opening argument that Solomon writes in verses 2 and 3. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Absolute futility. Everything is futile, or futile, depending on where you're from. What does a man gain for all of his efforts that he labors at under the sun? I like the way Eugene Peterson paraphrases this. Smoke. Nothing but smoke. That's what the quester says. There's nothing to anything. It's all smoke. What's there to show for a lifetime of work, a lifetime of working your fingers to the bone? The implied answer is absolutely nothing. It's all smoke. You read this and it gets pretty discouraging. The word futility, or the word translated in some versions as vanity or smoke, means vapor or breath. It's kind of a difficult word to put into an exact English translation. It has the idea of being something that is insubstantial, something that is fleeting, something that is meaningless, something that is here one moment and then just kind of vanishes like a vapor the next. It's translated in vain in some other places. For example, in Zechariah chapter 10, verse 2, it's translated with this idea of being in vain, that idols give vapid comfort. The comfort is empty, and it's fleeting, and therefore that kind of comfort is a lie. So Solomon is looking at life, and he's saying, man, it's just a bunch of smoke. It's just a lie. There's nothing here that you can depend on. There's nothing here that matters. There's nothing here that is worth you working, because once you're finished working for it, there's no gain. You will not show any kind of profit in life. Well, he's very discouraged. He uses a word in the Hebrew that we might pronounce havel. It's a great word for you to add to your vocabulary this year. When you see some things that your neighbors have and you don't have them and you wish you did, just remind yourself, havel, it's not going to matter. It's just smoke. It's going to disappear one day. Did you see the wreck that took place just a few weeks ago in Japan when 10 exotic sports cars on their way to a road rally following each other, the lead car got into a little accident and spun around, and all 9 cars behind it just plowed into one another. 8 Ferrari, 1 Lamborghini. Oh, there were some other expensive cars involved in all that. Well, you know, havel. It was just a bunch of meaningless stuff anyway. It's the way some people approach life. He approaches this whole introduction, if we will, to this book of Ecclesiastes with some more discouraging words. Let's dig in as if we need some more, starting in verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. One writer said, it's almost as if we are ants walking across a stone. That's how much of an influence we make in this life, according to what Solomon says. A generation comes, a generation goes, nothing changes. The earth is still just like it was. The sun rises and the sun sets, panting. It returns to its place where it rises. And it just sounds like he's talking about life's monotony in that passage. The sun just has this course, and it has to hurry across the sky, and the sun's almost out of breath when it gets to its resting place. And then he talks about wind. He says, gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning goes the wind, and the wind returns its cycles. Just, you can't catch it. You really can't measure it. It never stops. It's restless. It doesn't cease. He says, all streams flow to the sea, yet the sea's never full. The streams are flowing to the place, and they flow there again. And all things are wearisome. Man is unable to speak. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. I mean, I'm telling you, Solomon is discouraged. He's depressed. He sees no victory in life. He sees no gain to be had, for no matter how hard you work. And he's sort of looking at this and surveying life. And it's almost as if he's just come to this point where he's saying, you know, what difference does it make? There's a song that may characterize life for the working class, most of us in this room today, especially men. It speaks to the role of a husband, a father in this particular role. It's not a great theological song. I don't think you'll hear the choir singing it one day, but it was written by Sting, and it was performed by the Police and recorded in 1983. And let me just pull out one of his stanzas. In this, he talks about the enormous pressures and the frustrations that are put on this man as he's trying to make it from day to day. And he says this, another working day has ended, only the rush hour to face, packed like lemmings into shiny metal boxes, contestants in a suicidal race. Does that describe rush hour? Does that describe how you are when you're driving back to wherever suburbia you live, if you are working downtown? And sometimes it just seems that way. Well, I don't know that Solomon had a whole lot of insight into the future about this, but in his life, in his experience, trying all the things that Solomon was trying, it just seemed like a relentless, monotonous, ruthless, wearing down life. There was nothing victorious. There was nothing to look forward to. Why, it was bad, and it's just going to get worse, would be how Solomon might look at life. Let's see if there's any hope in verses 9 through 11. I'll go ahead and tell you there's not. Verse 9 says, What has been is what will be. And what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Can one say about anything, look, this is new. It has already existed in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of those who came before, and of those who will come after, there will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. Oh my goodness. If this were all there is, we almost hear what the Apostle Paul says in the New Testament, don't we? That if the resurrection didn't happen, then all of our preaching is just foolishness. If you and I have to take the book of Ecclesiastes and in that book alone find the gospel, then we're in trouble. Someone has even said the book of Ecclesiastes is in the Bible to remind us, or to at least point to, how bad we need the message of the New Testament. Because for so many people, what we find in these first verses of Ecclesiastes is life. You work hard, you try to get ahead, you play by the rules, you do what is fair, you do what's expected, you mind your manners, you try to be a nice person, and at the end, you just get stepped on. You never quite arrive, you never quite get there, you work hard, and you've been told, well, keep it up, buck up, you'll make it. Solomon says, I'm telling you, just doesn't work out that way. I'm pretty convinced that what people want to know today is that with their life and with their resources and with whatever measure of influence they have the possibility of making a difference. I really believe that to be true. We hear that among some of the young adults that we meet who come to our church. They're looking for a place where they can belong, where their life can matter. And that may be demonstrated by touching some of the downtown community and the residents who are here. There are others that come and want to be a part of a church family, a place where they can grow in their faith, certainly, but they want to make sure that they can make a difference worldwide for the gospel of Christ. And when we think about what separates us from this pessimistic, depressing view of life that Solomon presents, it's that there is the opportunity for us to have an alternative view towards life that makes a difference. In another men's magazine this past month or so, I read an article about the signs of burnout. And the signs of being burnt out, particularly in the workforce and the places where you work. And Solomon should have read this article. He would have at least had some other things he could have maybe added to his depressing letter. One of the signs of career burnout is that you're a grouch. You just become that person who's mean and snaps at people all the time. Do you recognize that? No elbows allowed at this particular point in the sermon. It says that one of the things you might want to do if you're sensing that about yourself is just go to work tomorrow and be nice to everybody. And smile and say please and say thank you and just mind your manners. And you know what the truth is? That's not bad advice. But there's more to it that we have. There's more for us who claim to be followers of Christ. And we're going to get into that in these next few minutes. Here's some solutions. Here's some possible scenarios of how we take these first 11 verses of Ecclesiastes and decide what we're going to do with it. One, you could resign yourself that this is all there is, that it gets no better, so just develop a tough hide and keep going. A second possibility is you could move. Find a place that's one of the cheerier cities in America. Find a church where it's a cheery church or whatever this application may be. Find a job where everybody's happy. You could always move. That would be an alternative. But let me tell you what I think is going to happen. I believe that if you move, you'll find out that whatever cloud you've been living under is going to be there too. See, there's got to be something more than that. A third possibility, you could go on a self-improvement campaign. We don't see Solomon really giving prescription for that. A fourth possibility is you could pursue pleasure. Just decide you're going to eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow you're going to die anyway. But Solomon has this has this unique ring in the book of Ecclesiastes where he comes back and tells us, you know, I've tried pleasures. I've tried every conceivable pleasure you can name, and I still find myself coming up empty. I mean, 700 wives, 300 concubines. Of course he came up empty. Imagine all the in-law problems that were involved in just that formula alone. Or you can do what I'm going to recommend highly. You can find an alternative in what is offered by Jesus Christ. We have to look to the New Testament. There's really no other place for us to examine today some steps that I think would be helpful. So in Luke chapter 9 this morning, if you have your Bibles or your devices, I encourage you to look at these verses with me for just a moment today. Luke chapter 9, verses 23 through 25. We hear in these words a theme that is very, very common to the teaching of Jesus. It's one of the repeated kinds of themes in his preaching ministry. Then he said to them all, "If anyone wants to come with me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life because of me will save it." We pause there for just a moment, and let me make sure that the backdrop of this is crystal clear for you. There is, on the one hand, a view towards life, a view of life that says if we work hard, if we play by the rules, if we get the degrees, if we impress the right people, if we know the right people, if we have the right people on our resume as references, if we can put all that stuff together, we're going to get out there and we're going to be successful. It's going to be okay. And we'll be able to live in the right zip code, and we'll be able to drive the right kind of vehicle, and our kids will go to the right schools, and life's going to be great. There is this view of life that is kind of summarized by those kind of thoughts. That's general, but there is that view of life. There's a similar view of life that's really not contrary to that, that even tells us, encourages you be ruthless in your career, you make sharp decisions, you be ruthless in what you do, and you're going to be able to accomplish and get to certain places in life, and it's the last man standing. It's Donald Trump being on the top of the empire saying to everybody else, "You're fired." But what Jesus says is there's an alternative. You know what I want you to think about with me over the rest of your life? Is that being a follower of Christ can be summed up in that idea that we have been called to an alternative kingdom. We've been called to an alternative way of looking at life. We've been called to not do what everybody else is doing because everybody else is doing it. But instead, we have this privilege of looking at this and saying, you know, it's different because of what Jesus Christ has called me to be, to do, to become. It's a different way of looking at all my future. Is that I don't have to depend on this silo of ruthless behavior or rewards that come for doing everything the right way. But instead, I've been called to an alternative. I gain my life by losing it. I gain all the things that are important by letting go of the things that the world says are important. I can emulate Christ and His life. I can be a person of humility. I can be a person who forgives a wrong. I can be a person who goes the second mile. I can be a person who turns the cheek. And in the process of doing that, look what I gain. I gain everything. Everything that matters. That which will not disappoint. That which will live on for eternity. Because it is an alternative way of living my life under the lordship of Jesus Christ. Solomon didn't have the benefit of seeing that. But you and I are Easter people. We look back through the pages and the lenses of New Testament history, and we recognize that there is, in fact, this new community, this new life that Christ offers. What is a man benefited, verse 25 says, if he gains the whole world? All of this calling, but loses this. No matter how wealthy a person is in this life, no matter if he gains the whole world, he's going to be bankrupt eternally if he dies without Christ. These next few moments, I invite you to think prayerfully about what it means for you to be a part of an alternative community as we begin this new year.